First of all, thank you very much, Patrick, for this intro outro music. And if you like the show, think about supporting. $3, maybe you can spare that. For me, it would mean a lot. So let's get into the episode.
This is a fun for you, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface. Pump, carb, soar, let's foil!
Welcome to episode 49 of Up on Foil today with your Vible. Let me introduce us real quick. Matt, I struggled with the beta foil a couple of days ago. I'm para-winging a lot lately. And today with me is your Vible. He has a foiling school at Lake Lucerne. And he has records tried or done on foil. We're going to talk about that. And you also run charity events. Shen muscular dystrophy events, and is there anything that you want to like add right away, or maybe correct me if I was wrong?
No, that's pretty true. The only thing I maybe add is that I'm a sailor since I'm a really young boy, and I came to foiling a few years ago, but it's really such a cool thing, so I'm addicted.
All right, we're gonna get into that. First, I need to clarify that, because the last time we've met was I think in 2007 when we had a Swiss championship in the 49er. I think that was the last time we saw each other. Is that possible?
Yes, exactly. When you with Fabio won the championship, and me and my brother came third after Arnaud. Probably the case, yes.
And that was where you are now, right? You're in Sisicon, located in Sisicon.
Exactly. That's exactly the place where the Swiss Championship was some years ago.
That is perfect. Maybe let's first talk about you. You said you started sailing when you was young. How do you get into water sports? Was that at Lake Lucerne as well? Or maybe can make a short description of your sailing and water sports career?
Yeah, of course. I'm originally from Bavaria, and my home lake is in Allgäu. It's called Forgensee. And I was starting sailing there when I was 8 years old with my dad. And after a short time, it became like this, that me and my brother always took the boat from my dad, and have been sailing more than him, and that was pretty cool. We liked it a lot.
And that was just like sailing just with him or with your brother, or did you go to regattas as well, international ones?
Well, we started at this age, and in the beginning we had like no relationship to any racing, but me and my brother, we really liked fast boats. So when we came to our sailing club, then we joined other racing sailors to go with them. And after short, we decided, okay, we need a known boat and we need a fast one. So we tried to get a catamaran. It was an old one and a cheap one, but it doesn't matter. It was fun to sail. And then we had been into catamaran racing since we have been like something like 18, until I made my civil service on the Baltic Sea. And then, we split up a little bit because I was in north of Germany, my brother was still in Bavaria. And then like our racing career ended for a while. And a few years later, when I came back to study in Munich, my brother asked, hey, let's do something with sailing again. And we looked which boat could we take. And then we ended up with the 49er, and we had great fun with the 49er. It was a great time.
It is one of the best boats for me still. But now you have a sailing school. What happened between 2007 and now? Did you start that sailing school just afterwards, or was there something in between?
No, 2007 in the Swiss Championship, I was still living in Munich, and I just came here for the sailing, the racing. I moved to Switzerland in 2013. And when I moved to Switzerland, well, first I didn't have sailing mates, so I bought a foiling mod to advance my sailing skills. And then I was around with my foiling mod on Lake Zurich, and that's one of the worst things I did, because Lake Zurich has such changeable winds, and sailing there with the mod is just rodeo. And especially the mod I had was not a really good tuned one. It was like a adapted one, where which was like a non-foiler before, and someone put some Mach 2 foils on them, and it was always a lot of construction work more than sailing. But it was fun, and I came into sailing like this. And then when the Skeeter came up, I saw this boat and I saw, wow, that's really cool, and that's so much more accessible for everybody. And yeah, then I bought the Skeeter and was sailing a little bit with the Skeeter, and I thought, well, with this boat we could do something else. I could do a school. And then I opened up the foiling school in the beginning with just two Skeeters and one rip. And yeah, and now it ended up in a whole different thing when wing foiling came up.
We're gonna get into that real quick. Just for the audio listeners who have never heard of skeeters and flying moths, the moth, as far as I know, is pretty expensive. Maybe yours, as it was a tuned one, was a little bit cheaper, but these things are expensive, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, my mod was really a cheap one. It was something like $6,000. But in general, foiling sailing is really expensive. That's true. So, like, a new mod will be something like 25 to 30, and then you begin starting tuning your foils, and then it will end up to 50,000 and more. That's really crazy in the racing sailing. Yeah. On the one hand, it's crazy with this racing sailing, because all the America's Cup teams have been into this, and like all the America's Cup team sailors even trained on the mod, so the level on the mod got incredibly high. On the one hand, it was like a little bit sad for all like hobby sailors, but on the other hand, it developed the whole sailing and foiling so much. It was incredible. It did such a big development the last years. That's really crazy.
But the Skeeter is more accessible. How is it different to Moth?
Yes. The Skeeter, the big difference is it has a hull which is nearly 1 meter wide. So if you can put it into a water like a normal sailboat, then you lower the dagger board, so that means the foils with the dagger boards, and then you can go on the water, hoist your sail on the water, and then you can start low riding, and you don't capsize all the time. Yeah, you can really just go a little bit like on a laser when you do low riding. And then when the wind is enough, you can just immediately go foiling with the same boat, and it's so much more accessible for everybody. So I tried as well to give lessons on a Wasp, and it was really horrible because people have been exhausted very fast, and only really good sailors can do this. But on the Skeeter, I think nearly everybody who can sail a laser can sail the Skeeter as well.
That is really cool. Like maybe a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, it was the first time I actually sailed on foil. I always wanted to do that, but I never like got the chance. Then a friend of mine, he has a flying moth, and I used it. And for me, it was pretty easy to get on foil as well. Then I like bared away and got that speed, and I got scared. I had to get back into the wind to break, because I was really, because I've heard these stories of broken legs and whatnot, so I was super scared. Is the Skeeter as well a little more chill?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely.
Oh.
So I had the same feeling when I veered away with my mod the first time as well, and they sailed all the lake downwind until there was no exception. I couldn't do anything more than go to windward again. But I really was scared. It was really crazy. But the mod is going with speeds up to 30 knots or something, and the Skeeter is normally sailing at 13 to 15 knots. And when you really push it hard, you can get it up to 22, 23 knots. But the Skeeter is much more easy, and it's not that aggressive. And I think one big difference with the Skeeter compared to the mod is that the mod has like a fixed foil with a flap which moves, and the Skeeter has a completely moving front foil. So that means when with the mod you get the nose down after a wave, for example, the foil really pulls you down, and then you make these really horrible nose dives which hurts when you're doing 30 knots. But on the Skeeter, as the whole front wing is floating, this doesn't happen. So you don't make these nose dives, and which makes it much more comfortable.
All right, all right. What's the clientele? Who comes to your school and goes on foil on sailboat? Is it the same people who wing?
Actually, a bit, yes. But actually, it's really changing a lot. When I began the school here 6 years ago, I had only the two Skeeters, and it was only about foiling sailing. And so I addressed like all to the sailors, and mostly sailors who are already interested in fast sailing, so racing sailors or dinghy sailors, whatever came in the beginning. And then it became a little bit wider, so a little bit more people, different people came, even yacht sailors, which need to adapt a little bit from a big boat to such a small boat. But it went quite good. And since the wing foil thing came up, I think it was 4 years ago, we started immediately in the second year when the wing foil equipment was accessible here in Europe. We started taking wing foiling into the school, because when I was young, I was a windsurfer in my youth as well. And I remember it was really hard to do windsurfing moves like power jibe or shaka or whatever. I trained a lot to do some moves like this. But in the wing foil thing, when I did this, it took me so short time to do like foiling jibes, foiling tags, and so. And then I discovered, okay, this will be the future, especially for here in Switzerland, where we have all these lakes with deep water and sometimes not that accessible shores. So it's difficult for kite surfing, for example. And you need much less wind than for windsurfing. So that will be a big sport. And since then, like, my customership turned a lot, because the wing foiling thing got bigger and bigger, and the sailing foiling thing is still existing, but it's at actually just a 20% part, more or less.
All right, let's talk about wing foiling a little more. Just, I've seen that you have a smaller foiling boat and the Skeeter as well, the Nikki. You still use that as for kids, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's looking exactly like the Skeeter looks, just in small, and it's designed for sailors from 35 to 60 kilos. And that's pretty fun for kids and for like people who don't like the Optimist because it's too slow. But I bought one of them, and I thought I would even buy more of them and make some more youth training. But in the end, the people didn't come. So I did advertisings in all the sailing clubs in my region here. And I did some days with the Dirt Regatta Club Sisikon. They made some foiling days with their youngsters and came like all together. But in the end, the boat was used a lot too less, so in the end I sold it in spring this year.
Okay, oh, you don't have any more. So let's talk about wing foiling. And as I've seen, you have these wing foiling classes, and you also have wing foiling turns. Maybe we can address both of them. I remember when I started wing foiling, it was so easy. Like on the first afternoon, I flew. I didn't chibe in the first 2 hours, but like almost. But it's just so easy, but still so fun. Do people expect that as well? Because now, like, I've said to my friends, yeah, you got to try it as well. And they struggled. Is it expected that they're going to fly and they're going to reach it in like 1 or 2 days? Or how do you promote these classes?
Well, like the normal classes, I'm, let's say, like the average customer, after 1 day of class, you should be able to drive forth and back on both sides, keeping up your height. So that means a real good crosswind course, and steer the boat, be comfortable with the board, and you start and come back in the same place. That's the goal for the first day.
But on foil.
Probably on a foil board, but you don't foil in the beginning.
Okay.
But we now give our lessons directly from the beginning on foil boards, so that people who are quite good with the balance and with all the wind things, that they can immediately start foiling. And my experience now is that, like all people who have some windsurfing experience, for example, they do in the first lessons really their first flights. And sometimes they do even more. So they do even not just a straight flight, they do even the first curves or very nice landings or whatever. And really, yeah, not very often happens that people do even their first jibe in the first lesson, but that's not the normal. I think the normal thing is when people come up onto foil on the second or third day, and then going straight 50-100 meters on the foil in the second day, I'm pretty happy with my customers.
All right. Do you do land drills as well, like for wing handling?
No, we do this all on the boat. So because when I do the wing handling on the boat starts moving when the people have the wing in their hand. So they already feel that the wing is doing a pressure in one direction, and you can drive the dinghy with the wing, so they get already the feeling how it works. This is the one reason. The other reason is that in the middle of the lake, the wind is much better than here on shore. So yeah, we go better in the middle of the lake.
That makes a lot of sense. What's like, how many students are there per teacher? And you're not the only teacher, are you?
Well, I'm like doing most of the courses by myself. But I have five guys and girls who support me and work here on our basis. So they come when I'm off or when I go to holidays. And we have classes, like if they're only beginners, we take maximum of four people. When there are more advanced people with us, we can take up to five people. And we have a radio connection between all our students and the coach. So normally the rip is somewhere on the lake, and the students going around, and I'm talking into my headset and talking to all the people and can give them advices. Very, very nice, even if they are not exactly next to me.
That's amazing. Maybe just as a little help for people who want to get into wing foiling, what gear do you suggest they use? Like the bigger board, the better, the bigger foil, the better, or how do you do that?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely. Yes. We clearly made the experience. The bigger the board and the bigger the foil is, the easier you get on foil, because the bigger the board is, you can concentrate more on the wing and the handling of the wing. When you have a smaller board, you have more to concentrate on your balance, and it costs you a lot of energy and a lot of like brain energy. So it's real better the bigger board. We have the best experience with the 167 liters. So it's really huge. It's 1 meter wide, but you can concentrate on the wing and you can go on and you can go foiling with these big boards. It's no problem. You can even do jibes, you can do tacks. That's all no problem. And in the beginning, a big board like this and a big foil with 2500 and a 365 stab, which is the stab bigger than some people use as a front wing, but is really, really slow. So you're foiling at 7 knots, and that's so slow that you don't are scared. So that's very, very good for the beginning.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. And do you have rigid boards or inflatable ones?
No, only rigid boards. So the
Only
inflatable
rigid.
ones, I tried them as well. They are really nice to handle, and you don't need to have too much care on them because they're inflatables. But it's much harder for the people to get on foil on an inflatable board.
All right,
It's a
stability-wise, huh?
good, yeah, exactly. Stability-wise, because normally they are more thick, so you're higher up, you have a higher center of gravity on the one hand. On the other hand, like with all the round rails, really more, they roll just more. And It's a nice thing if you travel by airplane and you need just a small luggage, but otherwise I would always suggest to take a hardboard. You will
And
just be
small
making
masks?
fast. 75 to
Okay.
80,
Well,
that's the
still.
best for a beginning.
Okay. I always thought that the smaller mask would be better because you have less movement as well.
On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, you more easily touch the surface with the foil. So with a 75 mask, you have a few seconds more to press it down again before the foil gets the air.
How much is like a weekend class cost?
Like a 4-hour class is 329 Swiss francs, and like the most sold and really best course at our school is the wing foil starter day, which means we do toe foiling in the morning. Then we have a short break, and then we do the 4-hour wing foiling class in the afternoon, and this is 500 francs. But after a day like this, you really know what is about the sport. You get immediately on the foil when we do toe foiling, so you have the first foil experience, how it feels when the board is flying. That's pretty cool. And then in the afternoon you get the wing, and with both elements together, you probably go almost fast, or you can get up on foil.
Because I have this friend of mine, and he tried on my gear, and I thought, well, I take my biggest foil, the biggest board I have, but he struggles with balance, so that might be a good thing for him to come to your place.
Yeah, welcome. No, that's really, and even I suggest to all my friends or all people from the wing foil chats when they ask and they don't want to come to school, it's no problem because it's up to everybody. But buy the biggest stuff you find, and even if you can sell it after 2 weeks after, you will make a such faster progress when you learn on the big stuff compared to, for example, a 90-liter board with a 1,800 foil. Then you will waste so much time on keeping the balance and coming up to the foil while the other guy on the big board is already foiling around and doing first maneuvers. So I always suggest buy the biggest board and sell it again if you can manage it and you can switch to a smaller board.
Those are long days for you, like morning, afternoons
For me,
on the water.
yes, these are long days. Yesterday, for example, we had a really busy day. It was perfect weather, and after this long raining period, like everybody wants on the water now, and I had even private classes after the group session in the afternoon. So I had 12 hours working yesterday. But when I'm on the lake and look, these mountains all around, and that's just great. I love it there.
All right, awesome. But I saw on your website, let me double check, foilingschool.com, with a dash between foiling and school, so people can check it out, that you also have like wing foiling turns, like sailing turns.
Yes, that's a really great thing. So that's the best. No, I really like this very much. We do this always in spring and in autumn. So that means before the season here in Sisikon starts, when the water is here something like 7 degrees, it's too freezy here. So we go to Sardinia and Corsica. We rent a big catamaran and go on the boat, like all together, 1 week from one spot to the next spot and go wing foiling there. And people who can do the wing foiling quite good can even foil next to the boat when we sail from one spot to the other. And you can do downwinders next to the boat with the safety
Nice.
of the boat, but somewhere in the middle of the ocean. And we have really nice places where we anchor and where we can do wing foiling in best wind conditions, and just we 8 people from the boat and no one else is there. That's just great. You don't need to carry your stuff a long time to the beach. You don't have any sand, so that's, in my opinion, it's all the best. And we always take a good cook with us. So you don't need to care about cooking or to looking for a restaurant. You just sit down, get fine food, and go foiling, sleeping, eating, foiling, sleeping, eating, and so on. That's perfect.
When you are making these sailing turns,
Yes.
it sounds amazing. But for you, Do you give classes as well, or is it also for you a possibility to take some time off and go winging yourself?
Yes, well, we do both. We do them as well for beginners, and then we do as well some classes. And but definitely, I get some time on the foil for myself as well. But like all over, I like it really much because I like sailing and I like wing foiling, and that's the best combination of both. But these are as well pretty hard weeks for me, because when you're responsible for the boat and for all your guests, and you always want to be at the best place at the right moment, you take a lot of time in checking winds and where, in which bay we go the next time, or from where to where, and where can we do a downwinder, or where can people go there and there. And you need to, yeah, to figure out the best combination between what everybody wants to have. If you want to go more in a calm spot with flat water, or if you want to anchor in a spot where people can get waves, or the best is if you have a spot where it's both possible. So that means, for example, you anchor in one spot and on the left side of the boat is flat water, on the right side of the boat there are waves. And but in Sardinia and Corsica we have a lot of these spots, so that's always cool. So let's say on an average day it takes me about 4 to 5 hours, just the planning, to checking wind, where we go, and like all the managing thing on the boat. And as well, we are always three crew on board. So that's me as a skipper. That's one guy or girl who is the cook. And that's a third person who is like the wing foil coach. And the wing foil coach is mostly watching for the people, doing like the safety stuff. We have always a rip with a outboard engine to get all the people back, or you to bring them windward or whatever. And so I'm looking more like the overall thing, and sometimes I'm doing even classes, but that's not the focus. Like the most classes and teaching does the guy or girl who's the wing foil coach.
That sounds amazing. And let's just, for the listeners and for your school, let's make a little publicity. There are 2 spaces left for October this year. Is that still correct?
No, they're already gone. Sorry, right. I'm not and that actually gone. With updating like my website, I'm not so the digital man, so yeah, I need to improve this. No, it's still gone, but next year we offer 6 weeks if everything goes well, and then we have enough more spaces for everybody who wants to join us, because yes, this October they're sold out now. I think the good thing is we have, yeah, that's very good. And I think the best thing is we have now more and more returning customers, because they like it so much. They book, when they finish, they book just for the next year. So that's really great. Yeah, and that's, I think the real great thing is that you have like such different conditions, and you can do like the whole day if you want, but you can do just 2 hours a day. But even if you do just 2 hours a day, you are on the boat and the other people are foiling around the boat, so you have always like a contact to them, and you are together as a group, and the one can foil 10 hours, the other one can foil 2 hours and sitting reading on top of the boat or whatever, and you still are in touch and you see what the other does. For example, there have been even couples who one of the two wasn't foiling at all, and they had fun both the whole week. So that's really cool thing as well.
And if you are on the boat or on the water for 1 week, you really improve. It's like, it's better than if you have like once every week for a weekend ride or something. So that's where you really improve, don't it?
Yes, definitely. Right. Yes. So you make really big progress in 1 week, and even you get like different conditions. Sometimes we go to absolutely flat water spots where you have no wave at all. And sometimes we go to spots where you can challenge your first wave or swell. And yeah, that's very good for the improvement.
That is amazing. All right. So we covered your school, I guess. Or is there anything you want to add to your school? Because after that, I want to get into your charity work.
Yes, welcome. Yeah. I think we have been probably one of the first schools to announce paroing courses last year in October, and but until now there are not too many people who want to do this, probably because it's really a lot harder than wing foiling. But yeah, if you want to try parawinging, come here, test it out. We have four different parawings here, and you can try it. Obviously, in like normal thermal conditions here, we don't have that big wave in Lake Uri, so it's yeah, more like the first steps, how to get in contact with the parawing, how the parawing works, and to get up on foil on like a flat water, and in my opinion that's pretty good, like for the beginning for powering. And once you can do this, then you can try it in the wave, because in the wave it's made for the wave. It's the great thing that you can peg it away in the wave, but it's so much harder in the wave, because standing up on the board, which is already going up and down, and yeah, when you don't have anything like to hold on, when it's, for example, not even enough wind in one moment, that's pretty hard. But when you begin here and you already can do handle the parawing, then you will have fun when you have the first waves.
Which, just out of curiosity, which wings are you using? Which parawings?
We have the Ensis Roger. We have the from Norse. We have the
Ranger.
From Ost. Yes, exactly. Ozone. And we tried as well the Fly Surfer one. But the Fly Surfer one was still not accessible in 5 meters. And as we don't have that much wind, like with smaller ones, it's not that easy. You need enough pressure that you can really go up.
And if you use it for a school, the Fly Surfer is going to be really difficult because of the long lines.
Yeah. But let's say, like, we don't have the intention to make in immediately like surfing down the waves and pack it away, so we mostly leave the kite up in the air, so then it's not that big issue if the lines are a bit longer.
That's true, although I thought it was pretty difficult, because I did this parawing comparison. I don't know if you've heard about it, like 8 different brands for free riding mostly, because I was at Lake Silaplana, now downwinding there. And yeah, now I have, yeah, already 4 new parawings for a part 2. I have the F2, the cool 777. I have the Ala from Subfoil, and the BRM, the Bahia, that I have here. And
cool.
Very
cool.
Of September, I'm going to compare even more, and it's going to be exciting as well.
Yes, sounds very cool. Tell me the date when you're going there. Probably I'll come by. It's very,
yeah,
very
try,
interesting.
You can try them too.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice, because it's really interesting. And I think it's like always with a new sport, in the first years the development is so big. It's such a huge difference between the first parawings and the version 2. And I think from version 2 to version 3, there will still be a big gap. And then somehow the curve gets flat, and then they will be more similar to each other. But in the beginning, it's a huge difference. And so I'm very curious about seeing which parawing works and for what you can use it.
Actually, that's for everyone. It's going to be, I think it's the 29th of August, or at least from the 1st to the 6th of September, I'm going to be in Silvaplana. So whoever wants to join, try these things, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, in this time, probably I'm sailing the Blue Ribbon Cup from Kiel to Aarhus and back. which is racing sailing, and I do this together with Thomas Plössl. Probably you know him as well from 49er sailing. I know him from my 49er times, and yeah, well, he's one of the best 49er sailors of the last few years. He won 2 Olympic bronze medals, and well, now we do some things together, and for example this racing trip which we do with customers. So, and there are still 2 places left, so if you want to join us racing sailing from Kiel to Aarhus and back, give me a call.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Let's get into maybe first your charity events. And if I remember correctly, or we talked with Dohe as well, one was when you crossed the English Channel. How did you come up with that? And can you maybe explain me and the audience why you actually start doing that?
Okay, yes, of course, I can explain this. So the idea came up because, like, I know, like, from my girlfriend's family, there's one family which have children with the Duchenne disease. And Duchenne disease, it's a disease where the muscles going away the older you get. So as a child, the mostly boys can do like every play and walk and do everything like every child can. And the older they get, the more the muscles go away, and they can't do anything more. And it begins that maybe at the age of 10, they need a wheelchair. And at the age of 13, they need an electric wheelchair. And then they need a lot of other support stuff. And when they get older, they need even support for breathing, because the muscles go away even to breathe. And somehow these children will die. They won't get very old, even with the modern techniques. And that's pretty sad to see. But yeah, somehow there is an action who's called Run for Duchenne Boys. And it's taking part, it's one part of the Zürich Silvesterlauf, which is a run who everybody can join. And there you can do, like, it for a group for charity reason, join the Run for Duchenne Boys group and collect some money for the children or for the families, because they need really support, because, like, everything is more difficult. And for example, traveling, or even like the normal life, they guten Morgen, is very difficult for them, and so they need support, they need technical features, and so, and there they start this fundraising with running. And 2 years ago, me and my girlfriend have been in Brazil for surfing during this time where it took place, and then I said, well, let's do something else, let's do some action which is called Foil for Duchenne Boys, and we will raise do some fundraising while foiling instead of running, because we are just not there, we are in Brazil. And then I asked some people if somebody would join, and Balz Müller immediately agreed and was in. And so Balz and me did a downwinder from Preah to Bitupita. So we surfed from Preah 130 kilometers downwind the coast, the Brazilian coast, in 7 hours. And that was like the beginning of these Foil for Duchenne Boys. And well, the next year I was back, and I could compete in the Run for Duchenne Boys, which I did. But I think, well, why don't we keep this and keep it even going and keep it even growing? And that's actually, yeah, what we did. So this, the first edition was together with Balz. Last year, I took another competition together with Doré Desmoisiers, another guy who I already know a longer time from sailing. And now he's in wing foiling as well. And we decided to go across the English Channel from France to England and back. So it was a challenge for us, and I think it was something a little bit extraordinary in the daily foiling business. So we fundraised some money for the children there, and this year we will be having the third edition, and we come up with a new idea.
Can you tell us about the idea or not yet?
Yes, of course. So the idea this year will be to make a real long distance downwind foiling in Switzerland. So we don't go away this year. So the idea is to go downwind the Neuenburger See or Lac Neuchâtel from the top to the bottom, and maybe not just one time in a day, maybe two times, three times, or even four times. Who knows? We don't know. I think it depends a lot of the wind which is coming, and it depends a lot of the people. And we want on the one hand to make this like to make more public, so we started like a group chat for these Voll für Duchen boys action, and we invited some of the like really into foiling guys, like you, for example, Jonas and Rob von Roll and Michi Neff, Balz Müller, Dori Demosier, and some more. But we now came up with the idea we could even like open it for really everybody. So everybody who wants could join us. And I think this would be great. So if a lot of people going downwind the lake, and maybe even two times or three times, or like the pros do it five times, we'll see. And we can count every kilometer we fall down. In the end, we're making a big list how many kilometers we went downwind. I think it will be a fun thing, and it will grow as well the community, and it will grow like the fundraising point as well.
And how do you actually get money out of that?
When you start as a foiler, you can register yourself on a website, which is still called Run for Duchen Boys, because like this is the main act, and then you insert like your data, your name and so on, and choose the brand Voll für Duchen Boys. And then you can ask your friends or people to donate some bucks for you foiling. So that means if every foiler collects with his friends 10 bucks here, 20 bucks there, some people give even a little bit more, and then it all together goes to the fundraising account from the Muskelgesellschaft, which is dedicated to the people which have this Duchenne disease.
That sounds like a really cool project. Not easy to organize though, because you need the perfect wind to do that, and people need to have time. How do you plan on doing that? Is there like a month where you say, all right, these are the possible dates?
Exactly. Yeah, that's that we absolutely know. Like in other things, like last year, we had a fixed data. We went there, we did this, and we came back home. And we had to have like the luck with the wind. But this time we know that on Lake Neuchâtel, it's not that easy with the wind. So we really need a day with good wind. So as well, I know it won't happen that like all people who have teamed up with us or want to do this really can do this, because probably it will be that the wind is not in the day where everybody has time to do it. But well, that's with wind sports. So I think we have like a time window which starts pretty soon. It's not exactly clear when we start the time window, and then we are like on standby, and when a big day is coming, then we do like announce it to everybody in the WhatsApp groups or whatever, and then we meet up and go.
If people listening now think like, that's a such cool project, I want to take part of it, can they join? How can they contact you to get into that group?
I think the easiest thing would be to contact me on WhatsApp or via email, and I will share the link where you can register pretty soon. I can even give you the link for the keynotes or whatever. So I think it will be somehow, it will be distributed that everybody who wants to take part can take part.
That is super cool and really cool project. I really hope that, because usually if it's windy, I don't have time. And if I have time, it's not windy. So I really hope these two come together, together with the actual date, where we're going to do that. So I'm really looking forward to that. Can people like go with whatever, like paddle, parawing, wing?
Yes, of course. They can join with whatever sport thing they want. If you do it with a kite or a windsurfer, you can even do it with this. It's not dedicated to one special thing. So I think it's more like a water sport thing. And if... well, it's now named Foil for Duchenne Boys. I think probably you will going better with the foil, because like downwinding, it's so much easier with the foil. But if you want to do it with a kite and a twin tip, why not? Go on.
All right. Cool. That sounds amazing. I want to just like to finish up, talk about your records or your record attempts, because I've seen on your website that you've been going the longest on foil for 24 hours, something like that. Can you explain what actually happened?
Yeah, kind of. Well, this was not wing foiling, it was sailing.
Yeah.
I think I'd start with one thing before, just to know how it came to this.
Sure.
2014, in really the beginning of all these foiling sailing here in Europe, there was a thing called the Jilbo Sail Session. And there they announced that they make a trip with a foiling boat to be the first people who foil around Cape Horn. And the skipper will be Franck Camas, so a famous French offshore skipper. And they are looking for someone to join them. And you can make like a video to send it to them, and they will do like a selection, and then you come up. And yeah, somehow I had support from a good friend who made me a script for a good video where I could make like some advertising for myself, sailing or whatever. And it ended up that I was the one who was sailing with Franck Camas around Cape Horn. So we foiled in 2015 around Cape Horn, and it was a really great experience. It was such a cool thing, such a cool from the nature. And even from foiling, we went there with a Nacra 20 FCS. So that's a foiling catamaran, 20 foot. And we've been on this boat, and it was a really good experience for me to be on the boat with Franck Camas, because Franck Camas, it's a really crazy guy, absolutely crazy guy. He's very professional in sailing, and he doesn't feel anything what hurts or whatever. So for example, you from 49ers Sailing, you know it, we had a Jennaker, a kite, a very flat one, so that means a lot of pressure on it, and there was no clue. So we had the Jennaker in our hands all the time, and when we sailed there, we had sometimes been sailing 6 hours and always the Jennaker in your hands. And he was sailing like on an Olympic course, which it's 20 minutes, but we have been out there six hours or something, even 10 hours on the boat. But wow. No clue. And every gust you need to bear away, and every then you need to sheet on. And somehow I said, hey, Franck, I can't hold it anymore. And he just answered, you have to learn to suffer. That was hard time, but I learned a lot. It was really so good, and you get into a mood where you can really change the borders. You can do even more and more, and you can go crazier just when you're like up with your mind. So in the end of this trip, I felt somehow, well, this was really, really cool, but it was going around Cape Horn and so, but it was like sporty wise not that big thing. It was more like a cool adventure, but it was not like you need to do so many miles in this time or whatever. And but I felt, okay, with this boat you could do more. And then I asked another Swiss sailor, which is called Simon Costa. And I knew him already from mini sailing. I asked him if he would be interested in trying to do the 24 hours record in the 20 foot class. So that means all sailboats up to 20 foot, and you have 24 hours of time and you want to sail as far as possible. And I said for myself, well, the actual record at this time was 344 nautical miles, which is more or less a 15 knots average on 24 hours. And it was held by Iva Bourgnon, which is another Swiss sailor, pretty crazy guy as well. I think everybody in the sailing world knows his name and his actions. And we thought, okay, with this boat, with the foiling boat, we could get further than 344 miles. And it came up. Simon said, yes, let's do this. That's a cool idea. And I talked to the guys from Gilbeau, and I was able to buy the boat from the Gilbeau sail session action, and somehow the project started.
That sounds amazing. And did you reach that goal?
Yes. Yeah, we reached it. It was a pretty hard way because we had some failures and some breaks and whatever. And the first day.
Yeah, like what? What broke? What happened?
Different things. In 1 year, we did a training on the Baltic Sea. And in this training, we destroyed one rudder. Because they have like really high loads, and when you go at high speeds, they get some vibrations. And when they start these vibrations, and it may last for a couple of hours, but if you go really long time, somehow it breaks, and then you're out of the game. I broke two ribs, so at one of the nosedives, I broke two ribs, and then it was end as well for this session. We still came back, and we improved the gear. We took even some spare parts with us, and so, and we came back the year later, and then we did it. We sailed 361 nautical miles in 24 hours, which was a little bit more than Iva Bourgnon did. But we had a failure as well. So like 1.5 hours before the time slot ended, we had a really big crash in front of Poland as well. We already had the miles done, so it didn't hurt that much that in the end we didn't reach 285, which was more or less the calculated thing we could have done. 361 was still the record in this time, and was a cool thing.
Sorry, I had to get the cat out. So what happened?
No worries.
You said you had a big crash. What happened?
That's a little bit complicated thing for somebody who's not into sailing, but I try to explain it as simple as possible. So the foils are always on a sailboat constructed like this, that on a catamaran, you have just the leeward foil in the water, and the windward foil, you take it up, so that you have less drag in the water. And in this crash happened something, that the line who keeps the windward foil up broke. So the foil went down, and when we didn't want to have it down, and it went even too far down, and then like the upper end from the foil was not still looking above the hull, it was going inside the hull, and then it came some force from the side, and it broke the hull on the inside. So the daggerboard house in the inside of the hull was broken. So we fortunately got the foil back out. We put a big rope on and secured it, that it was secure. but we saw that the daggerboard case was broken and water was running into this hull, and we knew that we don't have a lot of time until this hull would sink. So we decided to do one thing. We put both foil on maximum rake and tried to drive as fast as possible to don't get this hull too much into the water, or keep it already like a little bit floating with the lift from the foil. Yeah, this worked somehow. So it was like, then we have been going on a slower speed, like 8 knots, 9 knots, up to 10 towards the Polish coast, while we called the coast guard. And then we told to the guys from the coast guard, hey, we have a line already prepared and you can give us your line and then tow us please to the next harbor, but please don't go lower than 10 knots because then the foils don't lift the boat anymore and we'll sink. So they towed us to the next harbor with exactly the 10 knots. Everything was okay. The hull was more or less half in the water, half above, and we put like all the weight on the other hull and already put the sails down and arranged everything. And then the Coast Guard boat was towing us toward the next harbor, and it worked. And when in the harbor, they slowed down, the hull was completely full of water, and then it sunk and the boat capsized, but it was already in the harbor, so we had been safe. So it was like everything was good, but it was, well, it would have happened in the middle between Sweden and Poland. Well, it would have been another issue.
Wow.
So we have been lucky.
That is
lucky.
A story, man. Did you have like a security boat with you, or were you just going all alone?
No, we've been going all alone. We didn't have the money to afford a security boat, so we went just by ourselves. But we had like a pretty good safety net. So we had like a tracker on board, so everybody could watch us where we are exactly and at what speed we are going. It was live tracking, so like a lot of people watched this. So people already saw, okay, something's happening now, something's going wrong or whatever. And we had both like wearing expedition wetsuit, which is a dry suit even. So we had been really warm clothes below the dry suit. And we had like both like the swimming vest, and had both a satellite phone. We had both an AIS tracker, and we had both an VHF radio, and both like how do you call it, these fireworks which you can fire up,
like a
so
flare.
We had a lot of, yeah, the flares, exactly. So we had a lot of security stuff like on ourselves, so if somebody would have gone overboard, it would have been possibly pretty okay to find the person again. But
wow, that is a story, man.
Yeah, but we tried that we didn't want to go overboard, so we have both worn a harness and had both a line connected to the boat so that we couldn't fall off the boat.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. But that was not your last record attempt. And I look at your website, there was another English Channel crossing.
Yeah, exactly. That was as well a record which was held by Eva Bonio from Cowes in England to Dinard, which is near to Saint-Malo in France. And it was as well held by a Nacra 20, so a 20-foot catamaran. And we had the idea to do this with a 15-foot foiling catamaran with the iFly 15, which is a pretty cool boat. And yeah, we tried it, but unfortunately, we had just 2 weeks of time, and the time was too short to have a really good weather window. So in the end of the time we had there, we said, okay, let's go now, even if it looks we can't do it. And then we just went out, and in the beginning it was terrible because we had been too slow. Then somehow there came some wind and we came back into game, and we really calculated, okay, now it will be running, now we can really do the record, which was 19 hours and 42 minutes somehow there in this time. But then in the end, the wind died again, and there was so much seaweed. We had so much seaweed in the foil. So yeah, we ran out of time. It was something like 22 hours we needed. So we didn't do the record, but we wanted to do it again the year or 2 years after. But then Iva Bonio and another French guy came back, and they now made the new record, and now it's something like 11 hours, and 11 hours it's yeah, that's a really very very good time. So you need a perfect weather now to beat this record again.
That was 2019. That was your last record attempt, or was there another one you
exactly
just didn't mention?
Well, no, not really a record attempt. I think now the thing with wing foiling is a little bit different than with sailing foiling, because in sailing foiling you're just focused on speed and on a time on distance thing. But with wing foiling it's more like the playful and the fun factors which are counting as well. So the last things I did more like experimental is in wing foiling, and so there I didn't count like all my miles and speed and whatever. And it's interesting. For example, in sailing I always did GPS tracking and measured the speed and the angles and the tacking angles and the jibing angles and whatever. And in wing foiling, I not even if I go down and I switch on my GPS watch, or very, very rarely. So it's not that in my focus, in my interest. It's nice to see, or when we went across the channel, of course, we had a GPS tracker to record this. But in the end, it didn't matter if you're a few kilometers more or less, or if you're faster or not. But it was more a cool experience.
For all the audio listeners or the video, the watchers of the video, if you missed episode number 2, one of our first ones, with Doré de Morcier, he talks in length about that experience. So go check that episode out. Yo, we've been talking over an hour already. Is there anything you want to add that we forgot to mention?
I think we already talked a lot, so all good. So I think foiling is a really cool thing. I can everybody give the advice. Try it out. Come here to nice Lake Sisikon, or go to Silver Plana or whatever, and try foiling, and you will be happy. That's just a great sport.
All right. But watch out, it's addictive. That's really a thing that you need to be aware of. For all our audience, if you enjoyed this episode, and if you're still listening after an hour, make sure to leave a comment. Like, go on Apple Podcast and write us a review, or give it some stars on Spotify. That would really help us out. Thank you very much, Jo, for coming on the show. And actually, that would be super cool if I could come to Sisikon once, or we meet on Lake Neuchâtel for this Foil for Duchenne.
Cool. Hey, thank you, Matt, for having me here. Nice. And yeah, it would be nice to meet you live again. Yeah, let's see how it works out.
Awesome. All right. Have a good day. Cheers for you.
Thank you as well. Bye.
Bye.